I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's February 13th, and we have a lot to talk about today. A lot of good stuff to get to, but before we do, I have a favor to ask. Although we launched this podcast just a few months ago, we're already experiencing a couple of thousand downloads every week, and that number continues to grow, and for that, I am incredibly grateful. I think it's absolutely amazing. And by the way, that number doesn't even include those of you who are listening to the podcast streaming on the MS&Me radio network. But when you look at the Real Talk MS podcast page on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, it says that we haven't received enough listener ratings and reviews for them to post a rating of the podcast. So it would mean a lot to me if you would take just a minute, head over to iTunes, do a quick search for Real Talk MS, and give us a rating and a review. I'm getting email and messages from a lot of you saying some really nice things about the podcast, and I want to make sure that we're reaching as many people with it as possible. So your rating and review will go a long way to extending our reach to other folks who might also benefit from listening. And we have a great episode lined up today. My guest on the podcast is Kay Julian. Kay is an executive vice president at the National MS Society, where she oversees the services that the society offers. And today, we're going to be talking about one particular service that I consider absolutely remarkable. If you're looking for no-cost, customized, personalized, one-on-one expert advice on all sorts of issues that people with MS encounter, you're going to want to pay attention to my conversation with Kay. But before we get to that, there are a few other things that you should know about. We talk a lot on the podcast about clinical trials, and we talk about them for a few really important reasons. First, I think it's important to know about the work that's being done to better understand, treat, and ultimately eliminate multiple sclerosis. And I think it's also important to make sure that we're getting the big picture to talk about the tremendous amount of research that's taking place all around the world to solve the riddle of MS. But one of the most important reasons that we talk about clinical trials is that you can't help but feel hopeful when you hear about the level of commitment and determination that researchers have toward furthering our understanding of MS. But recruiting patients for clinical trials is hard. It's a more difficult process than you might imagine. And by the way, that's true for all types of clinical trials, not just the ones that are related to MS. The truth is that when it comes to recruiting for clinical trials, most of the volunteers tend to be middle-aged white women. As a matter of fact, the FDA has said, and I'm quoting now, overall, few people actually sign up for and participate in clinical trials, and those who do participate don't always represent the U.S. population. Participation is especially low for certain populations, including adults age 75 or older, and people from certain racial and ethnic groups. And so what ends up, and that's the end of the quote. So what ends up happening is that men, young people, and people of color lack representation in clinical studies. And this ends up becoming important because clinical studies can be most accurate when the patients in these studies reflect the overall population of people living with multiple sclerosis. And we know that MS affects men. We know it affects young people. We know it affects people of color, but without these groups reflected in our research, we're left assuming that the results of any study will affect all of these different patient groups in the same way, and that's not always a comfortable assumption to make. One organization that has seen this phenomenon of underrepresentation or imbalance in research studies firsthand is the Accelerated Cure Project for Multiple Sclerosis. The Accelerated Cure Project manages a patient-led research network called iConquerMS. And so with a research grant from the Patient Outcomes Research Institute, the Accelerated Cure Project conducted a survey of people living with MS, and the results of that survey have been published in a report entitled MS Minority Research Engagement: Experiences and Opinions About Research. And the study indicates that minority populations living with MS are just as interested in participating in MS research and clinical trials as anyone else. And so this report might serve as a wake-up call for researchers who are designing new clinical trials to double their efforts to recruit minority participants, to make sure that their message is getting across in a language those participants are going to understand, and to be clear about how their study will benefit members of minority communities within the greater MS community. If you're interested in reading the lay language summary of this report, I'm including a link in the podcast show notes. Obviously, this report is just a start at cracking open the door toward greater inclusion in scientific and medical research, and hopefully that door continues to open wider and faster. Researchers at the Tisch MS Research Center in New York have demonstrated that a stem cell treatment that they started researching and developing in 2001 may reverse disability in progressive multiple sclerosis. If you're scientifically predisposed, this treatment involves injecting autologous mesenchymal stem cell-derived neural progenitors directly into the spinal canal within 30 minutes of having harvested the stem cells. Getting back to speaking English, the 20 participants in this initial phase 1 clinical trial demonstrated a reversal of physical disability as measured by improvements in the EDSS, which stands for Expanded Disability Status Scale, which anyone living with MS is probably already familiar with. In addition, 70% of the participants had greater muscle strength and half of them exhibited improved bladder function. Well, based upon these promising results, the FDA has approved a larger phase 2 clinical trial, and the Tisch MS Research Center of New York is investing $5 million to build a new regenerative medicine laboratory where this research and treatment will continue to be developed. You know, at the top of the podcast, I talked about how learning about clinical trials can't help but make you feel hopeful. Well, there's a long way to go in further developing this particular treatment. And this treatment, getting as far as it has, is a result of about 15 years of research that came before it. But you can't help but feel that every day, science is moving us a little bit further down the road toward unraveling multiple sclerosis. In 2010, the FDA approved the drug Ampyra as a treatment designed to improve the walking ability of people living with MS. Well, researchers announced at the ACTRIMS forum that took place this month that Ampyra also improves cognitive function and movement in upper and lower extremities. Turkish researchers set out to evaluate the effectiveness of Ampyra on other MS symptoms besides walking, and they discovered that after 6 months of treatment with Ampyra, MS patients registered both physical and cognitive improvement. You know, I know that there are people living with MS who aren't taking full advantage of the drug therapies that are already available to them. And while we know that every drug isn't right for everyone, this should be one of the most important conversations that you have with your neurologist. Together, you should take the time to review your symptoms and evaluate the best course of symptom management and disease management for you. You know, being informed and being a full partner in your own treatment is the most fundamental step that you can take as an informed medical consumer. And I hope that everyone listening is taking that step. Having just reminded you that every drug isn't going to be right for everyone, this feels like the perfect time to mention the results of another clinical trial that demonstrated that another drug already on the market has been shown to increase the walking speed of MS patients. The drug is amantadine, which is prescribed to treat Parkinson's symptoms, and it's also sometimes prescribed as a flu prevention treatment. Amantadine is also sometimes prescribed off-label to treat MS tremor. So this study took place in 14 different research centers across the United States. It involved 60 MS patients who were experiencing walking difficulties. Half the patients in the study received amantadine, and the other half were given a placebo. And the result of the study showed that the patient group that had been given amantadine experienced a 16.6% increase in their walking speed. And a majority of those patients actually experienced a 20% improvement in their walking speed. The phase 3 clinical trial to further test amantadine for the MS population is expected to begin later this year. We know that people living with MS experience depression at a much higher rate than the general population. While about 17% of the general population is likely to be diagnosed with depression, half, a full 50% of the MS population will be diagnosed with clinical depression. But one thing that isn't clear is why people with MS are likely to develop depression. And one of those reasons, according to researchers at Penn State, is the stigma of having multiple sclerosis. Now, stigma is the experience of being set apart and being seen as less than others because of a particular personal characteristic. Obviously, people living with MS know that they're living with a disease that, as of today, is incurable and carries with it a wide range of potential symptoms that may or may not affect someone. Well, that's something that can cause anyone to feel stigmatized. The study also found that people with greater psychological reserve, that is, they have a sense of having a support network around them, and they feel as if they can advocate for their own needs, well, they tended to be less affected by stigma. And even if they did feel stigmatized, they were less likely to be depressed. Which, by the way, is one more reason that I will always encourage everyone living with MS to become an MS activist. Advocating for your own needs just feels empowering. And as you hear about the stories of so many other MS warriors who have become MS activists, you know you're not alone. Well, in this study, researchers used data from over 5,000 participants enrolled in a semi-annual survey conducted by a research arm of the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers. This particular research study is a longitudinal study, which means that the people in the study are followed over a long period of time, and by doing that, researchers were able to separate out cause and effect when it came to things like depression. From the time someone is newly diagnosed all the way through their MS journey, people turn to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society to access just an amazing wealth of information and resources. But there's what I consider to be a truly remarkable resource that the MS Society provides that you need to know about. In a moment, we'll be talking about that resource and more with my guest, Kay Julian. Kay is the Executive Vice President of Services at the National MS Society. I mentioned in last week's podcast that the first thing we did after my wife Jean was diagnosed with secondary progressive MS was to call the local chapter of the National MS Society to find out where we could get some information about a disease that really until that day we had never even thought about. Well, the National MS Society fields phone calls like our call every single day. And of course, they also have a website with an incredible amount of information that people can access. But in addition to providing great content, The MS Society also provides really worthwhile and important programs and services to people who are living with multiple sclerosis. My guest on the podcast today is Kay Julian. Kay is the Executive Vice President who oversees services at the National MS Society. And welcome to the podcast, Kay.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
You know, when someone visits the MS Society's website, the first thing they're going to notice is just this huge amount of information that the Society provides, which is truly outstanding. Can you walk us through the kinds of services that the Society provides?
Sure. It can be overwhelming. I think people often go to the website as kind of a first source. And what they'll see is a whole array of options and information and resources for them. And so one of the things they'll also see is they'll see as they're surfing and they're looking and they're exploring the subjects that are important to them, they'll see a pop-up from one of our MS navigators too, who will say, would you like to chat? And that is a way to help navigate through the broad expanse of what we do. So what we do is try to think about the challenges of MS that people affected by MS have, and we'll be able to think about how are we addressing those, or who else is in the mix as we address these together, because we are not the only resource. What we're really about, too, is understanding who is in this space, who is in the MS community, and what are our collective roles, who is best at what. And so some of the things that we do really run the gamut from everything from somebody who has been newly diagnosed and who may need a referral for a neurologist, for example. It might be somebody who has had MS a little bit longer, further in their MS journey, and they might have issues around employment, you know, understanding and wanting some assistance and working through some of those issues or applying for benefits. It might also be around caregiving issues if it's, you know, from that perspective. And it also, we do a lot of work with healthcare providers too, in terms of how we really partner together to support people with MS too. So I can dive into any of those areas, but it's a pretty broad expanse that we try to make sure that we're there for.
Well, I think that the MS Navigator program is pretty remarkable in every way. Can we drill down a little bit and talk about how that works?
Yeah, happy to. So we really consider that our flagship program at the MS Society, and it's something that is very unique to be able to have this level of support and resource to people affected by MS. So last year, we had about 180,000 inquiries come in. So folks, just like the way you described at the beginning of this conversation, picking up the phone and calling us, folks that might also be online, as I described, looking at our website and then having the opportunity to chat with with a MS Navigator, might also be someone finding us through email or social media. So, and it might also be somebody that, you know, their healthcare provider, a neurologist, has connected them to the MS Navigator program. So there's a lot of different avenues to reach an MS Navigator. And what they're really all about, this whole program is about, is finding sustainable solutions. And really, navigators are designed to serve as supportive partners. And so what that really means is the kind of conversation that happens to really get at the nut of an issue and to really be able to work through with someone, what is it that would not just provide a temporary solution or a Band-Aid? Is there a solution that could be something that would be more sustainable and life-changing? And so that isn't always possible. As you know, it depends on local resources, what's happening in a community, a person's particular circumstance or situation. So that the MS Navigator can really dial into that, understand a situation, and then work through that with someone. Now, depending on the complexity, this may be a conversation that, you know, if it's a simple referral, somebody, as I mentioned, newly diagnosed, you would like a referral to a neurologist, that may be a common one conversation. If it's something more complex, it may happen over time. multiple conversations. And so they are the person who calls in, person affected by MS or who's chatted in or whatever channel, they're connected to that particular MS navigator through the resolution of that particular issue. Now, if there's another issue, down the road, they'll call back at maybe a different navigator. But all that information is, we know from the previous call, kind of what that situation was about as well. The other piece of this that I think is also unique is that for folks, a smaller percentage, that have really complicated, multiple and varied issues, we have a case management program where navigators will work through this solution to the best they can. And at some point, it becomes clear that we need to know more. There needs to be a home visit. There needs to be more intensive intervention. There needs to be a care plan with some goals. There needs to be a lot more assistance mobilized. And so MS navigators then move that case to our case managers. And so they're all part of the same MS navigator program, but there's this breadth and depth that really exists within that program to be able to really meet someone where they are and be able to address what it is that they need.
You know, in this day and age of artificial intelligence and chatbots and all sorts of automation that's designed to mimic human interaction, I think it's really important to make clear to everyone listening that MS navigators are real people. There's nothing artificial about that intelligence. These are people who are going to work one-on-one with you.
They certainly are. This is a really great group of individuals. Are, you know, front-facing, and then, of course, there's a team behind them that are also making sure that the information, the resources are dated and current and comprehensive, and that the phones are working and that the systems are easy to connect with us through. So it's a huge team, and the folks that the MS navigators who someone will connect to, they are trained professionals. These are folks that are highly skilled and equipped that come to us with a variety of backgrounds, often including social work or another kind of human services work, empathetic. They might have been teachers or counselors, and that have all the right kinds of listening skills and conversational skills to be able to really move through something, a conversation to get at the essence of it and be able to move through towards solution. So they are indeed very real and pretty awesome folks.
Wow, they must be. I think you mentioned that last year they fielded 180,000 requests.
Correct. Contacts, yep.
That's fairly remarkable.
It is. And I think we're seeing an increase in that because we are also, we've shifted our approach to be more, even more in-depth than we were before. The way I've described is just taking it even another step deeper. And we started to talk about the program more, just to do a little bit more promotion around it. So I think some of that is what we're seeing too. And of course, just word of mouth. Somebody has a positive experience, they're able to find a solution or a resource. That's good. We want people to be able to take advantage of this resource. And really what it also does is it's not just it might be its own solution, but it is also a channel. It's kind of a hub to other solutions. So MS navigators, their role is to understand resources and within us, within the MS society that we might have, but also in other community organizations. So this is all about the beginning of how we really connect people with affected by MS to each other. Sometimes that is the answer. Folks want to talk to others that have similar circumstances or life situations, you know, or to other community resources. There's others that do particular niche work that is more significant and more targeted than what we might do. And so they're connected to those or to their communities. And communities have a lot of different interpretations. And so we're making sure that people get connected where they need to be connected as well.
You know, multiple sclerosis is, for lack of a better term, it can be tricky. And it can be so tricky, especially when you're facing it as someone who's recently been diagnosed, because, as you know, if you meet 10 people with MS, you may meet 10 different sets of symptoms. And that lack of commonality, I think, is confusing to a lot of folks. And a couple of minutes ago, I mentioned that when my wife was first diagnosed with MS, we called the MS Society and asked where or how we could find good information that would help us better understand her diagnosis. We did that because at that time, we didn't know what else to do, and it seemed like a good first step. I'm happy to say it was an outstanding first step for us, and I'm glad that was the direction we chose to go in. Talking to people who may be more recently diagnosed, what steps would you suggest to them to plug into the right information, the right sort of next steps for them to take in understanding the MS journey?
Right. Well, we most definitely hear from people who have been newly diagnosed. And those may come through healthcare providers. Sometimes they'll have found a neurologist on their own, what's that. Then a neurologist may connect them to the MS Navigator. And then the Navigator will really be able to understand a little bit more about what challenge they're currently facing. Because as you described, out of 10 individuals, there might be 10 different situations. So for someone only at this moment needs to make sure that they feel assured they have good quality healthcare, that they've got the right neurologist, the right person to go to. And so that may be the resolution there. Somebody else may say, you know, I really need to be connected with others. I need to know, I want to talk to other people who have MS. And so that is all about connecting to the MS communities. And so we have 1,200 self-help groups across the country. That is right for some folks, not for others. That's an option for folks. There's also online communities through msconnection.org. And people there can set up their own kind of steps. You know, so if you want to have a way to talk to others that are in your situation, you can form a group around that and have a conversation around that. And we're looking at one of the tasks ahead for us is to really look at what are more ways and more varied ways that we can connect people with MS to each other. Because that's one of the things we hear, you know, always consistently is we really want to connect to each other, too. And so we're looking at how we can do that. And we have some other kinds of one-on-one peer connection programs and such. So we're really looking at that to see how we might be able to even strengthen that. Other folks may be in a different situation. They may be having family or marital issues. They may be having employment issues or fear around having employment issues. There may be insurance kinds of issues as well, you know, some jeopardy feeling shifts around their benefits. So we have some schemes around that, for example, around benefits and employment, folks who can help understand insurance plans, provide some advice around that, people who can help with associations. There's a lot of different elements to this, and we're prepared to meet people where they are, which is the fluidity that I think MS Navigators really need to bring to the mix, and they do.
Well, Kay, I can't thank you enough for spending a few minutes talking with us today. I think just in terms of our conversation alone, it's going to help a lot of people understand two important things. Number one, that they're not alone. And number two, that there are amazing people with amazing resources at their fingertips and they're ready to share. So let me thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks so much, John.
That's going to wrap up this week's podcast. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time.